American cities are tightening their security after the terrorist attacks in Paris. In a purported ISIS video yesterday, the militant group threatened to strike Washington, D.C. So could ISIS repeat a Paris-style rampage in the U.S.? Daniel Benjamin was the Obama administration's ambassador-at-large and coordinator for counterterrorism at the State Department. He's now director of the John Sloan Dickey Center for International Understanding at Dartmouth College, and he joins us now from Hanover, New Hampshire. Dan, you wrote about this in the New York Times yesterday. The piece was headlined, "Could Paris Happen Here?" So what's your answer?
Well, let's begin with the obvious. There's no such thing as a perfect defense. Anything is possible. But having said that, I think the chances of such an attack happening in the U.S. are considerably lower than they are in Europe because of a number of things. One is we have much better border controls, and the possibility of someone or a team coming in from a Middle East war zone, or even for that matter of radicalized Europeans coming into the United States to carry out such an attack, is much reduced. European border controls have never been up to U.S. standards, and the situation is made worse, of course, by the staggering influx of refugees into southeastern Europe right now from Turkey and ultimately primarily from Syria, but from many countries.
So you're basically talking about the Schengen rules, which allow sort of passport-free access within the European Union, correct?
No, in part. The Schengen rules make life easier for bad guys once they get inside the EU. I'm also talking about the external border controls. Mm-hmm. And those, in the view of U.S. government experts, have long been less than they should be. Mm-hmm. And so it's easier to get into Europe than it is to get into the United States. Of course, we're the beneficiaries of our geography, as we have been throughout our history. And you can't get to the United States from most of those places except by taking a plane. And we have implemented some, number of layers of security on air travel that I think give us more protection than the Europeans have had.
And our borders with Canada and Mexico, are those safe from jihadist terrorists coming in from other countries?
So these are enormous borders, of course, and no border regime is perfect. But we have very, very close relations with our neighbors, especially the Canadians. Of course, if you think back to the Millennium Plot in 2000, we did have jihadists come across the northern border, but those conspiracies were foiled. You can't rule out the possibility that someone will try that again. But Canada also has an array of different agreements to monitor aviation and to control the people who are coming in there. Mm-hmm. In the south and southwest of the United States, people are extremely exercised about the border, and of course we've had big migratory flows that were quite destabilizing. But there has not been a history of extremists coming in through there. I think it's always a possibility, but we do monitor it quite closely.
What about the European jihadist infrastructure that exists in Europe? It not only supplies weapons, but it's also the ideology. How do you compare that to American Muslims and whether we face that same sort of threat within our own borders?
Well, we do have people in the United States who are alienated and who have become radicalized. We've had roughly, it's estimated, 250 people go off to Syria, many of them to fight with ISIS. But compared to the European situation, I think we're doing okay. The European Muslim minorities really across the continent tend to be less educated, more discriminated against, and that makes a big difference. And as a result, you'll see much more sympathy for extremist groups in Europe than you will in the United States. By contrast, I think the U.S. Muslim community has been extremely concerned about the threat of extremism getting into its communities and causing its kids to be tempted by that and to go off and do things that they will certainly regret. So we are better off in that regard. I know the Europeans have been trying to ameliorate some of the grievances of their minorities. But every time you have an attack like this, you know, things turn several notches in the other direction. You see another hike in Islamophobia and anti-immigrant sentiment, and it is ultimately a bad calculation, a bad situation there.
So you argue that basically the data shows and the economics show that the incidence of malcontents is lower in the United States than in Europe, and that some of the deeply alienated Muslim attacks that we have had, like Nidal Hassan, the Fort Hood shooter, or the Tsarnaev brothers in the Boston Marathon bombing, that they were more lone wolves, less representative of a trend?
So the lone wolves were the trend, both in the U.S. and in Europe, until really the last few months, and particularly, you know, the Paris attacks of last Friday. If you go back to Charlie Hebdo in January, those were people who appear to have been inspired primarily from outside, but and one of them may have gotten some training in Yemen, but their own affiliations with extremist groups were quite hazy. I think one group of attackers talked about having a link to al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Another said that they were you know, somehow related to ISIS, but there was not a lot of substantiation of really hard connections there. So I think that for the United States, the lone wolf paradigm is probably going to continue to be the dominant one, although you can never promise these things. And I think in Europe, we'll probably still see some, shall we say, homegrown or independently inspired acts of terror. But mm-hmm. Europe clearly does have a problem with ISIS. Now, Europe has always been more more threatened by ISIS because of its proximity to the Middle East, and because mm-hmm. of its communities and because of its border problems.
Well, you know, the paradox of that is Europe is more threatened by ISIS, and at the same time, Europe has less money. Its security agencies have fewer resources to protect their homelands. I mean, you've talked about how there are post-9/11 visa requirements and no-fly lists, but what about the amount of money that the United States has to spend versus Europe in things like surveilling people around the clock? I read that the French would have needed 12 people to surveil all their militants around the clock, and they simply don't even have that in their domestic anti-terrorism apparatus.
We had an enormous shock on 9/11, and we responded in sort of our classic American way by going big on a lot of different programs. By contrast, I don't think Europe felt the same shock of recognition. When you talk to European policymakers, they have often lamented American overreach, or alternatively, they lament their own population's reluctance to spend heavily on security. And in a sense, this is of a piece with their reluctance to spend on conventional military. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a very different sensibility in Europe.
And that may be changing now?
It's too early to say. Certainly everyone is rushing new funding bills to their parliaments, but we've given them an enormous amount of help on intelligence and law enforcement over the years. And the question now is whether they're going to try to build larger complementary capacities so that we're all safer.
Okay, briefly, in the few seconds we have left, what are the specific tools that you think could be used effectively against ISIS now? Is it sanctions? Is it anti-terrorism assistance to our friends in the Middle East? What would work best now?
Well, there's no one silver bullet. I think it is positive that we will see the air campaign strengthen. It is positive that we will see stepped up intelligence efforts. I think that we continue to need to build our base, our understanding, our capacity to listen in on what's going in Syria and Iraq. And I think that more broadly, when you're talking about countries in Africa, countries farther away from the battlefield in the Middle East, then building up their rule of law capacities, their ability to combat terrorism using their own institutions in a way that doesn't drive radicalization is very important. I think also to continue to train up their special operations forces and their high-end police is very important, because limiting terrorist damage is a critical part of this. Defense is as important as offense in this area.
All right. Dan Benjamin was the Obama administration's counterterrorism coordinator at Hillary Clinton's State Department. He's now at Dartmouth College. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.